Kia ora tātou. Ko Holyoke te maunga, ko Mississippi te awa, no te Unaititi te iti aho, ko Ark Voyage tōku tāne, ko Buckhalter tōku whānau, ko Abby tōku ingoa. Hello everyone, my name is Abby Buckhalter. I would like to thank the Wellington Abrahamic Council for inviting me to join their panel of speakers this evening to discuss young people, social media and technology, and the way in which the relationship between young people and their devices can impact on their well-being. To clarify, I'm aware that we can mean many things when we talk about devices. For me, I'm less referring to the tech itself, so it doesn't so much matter if we're talking about a phone, a tablet, a computer, and more to the things that young people access via said tech. So I'm just going to do a quick activity, participation optional. So I'd like people to share something that your child or young person in your life uses their device to do. You can just shout it out.
Text their friends.
Text their friends. That's a big one.
Play games.
Do your homework.
Okay, we got, that's the best kid. Do their homework. Go on Facebook.
Discord.
We'll talk about Discord. Instagram.
Snapchat.
All the apps. They know all of them. Oh, wait. Sorry, I missed one. Dating and
pornography.
That's a big growing one, especially with teenagers. Okay, I feel like that's a pretty good cross-section I was looking for. I wrote down things in case no one said anything. So thank you for making me not have to say that part. Okay, so why have I started with this activity? It's because I think it's important to recognize that not only do we live in an increasingly digital world, but that this more tech-forward, device-driven world is, for most of our rangatahi, the only world they've really known. I once told a 5-year-old that tablets didn't exist when I was his age, and the shock of that stopped a full-blown tantrum in its tracks, like full-blown. And then his mom told him, cell phones didn't exist when I was your age. And oh, I wish you could have seen his face, it was amazing. He was 5. So all this is to say, it's impossible for most young people to situate themselves in a world without some connection to a device. When it comes to navigating devices, social media, internet at large, etc., we as a society are dealing with more complexity than we've had to deal with in the past. However, this doesn't mean that it's all bad news. There's some really wonderful gifts that have been given to us. Connection, community, information, art, music, even the ability to create art, currency, worlds. The downside of this is that for all intents and purposes, we're basically dealing with the digital Wild West, where you can find pretty much anything, say pretty much anything, and do quite a lot of things that wouldn't necessarily fly in the brick and mortar world. So I wrote the next sentence as, for an adult, that is mostly fine. And I was going to talk about how adults are more easily able to navigate it. We have a clear sense of cause and effect, empathy, etc. But then I immediately deleted it because I remembered how awful people are on the internet. So I guess this means the first thing I should talk about is positive modeling. Children and young people learn behaviors by modeling those around them, especially parents and caregivers. Monkey see, monkey do. Young people can get a lot of messaging in their lives these days about how much device usage is considered acceptable or normal. And I put air quotes around normal because a lot of abnormal behaviors can become normalized if enough people are doing them, enough young people in this case. And kids notice a lot more than we give them credit for. They see how much mom and dad are on their phone or on the computer. They talk to each other about how much device time they get, each of them gets at home. And I know they compare notes and then bring those notes back home to their own parents to lobby for, you guessed it, more device time at home. And it's crucial then, if you have a child, to think from an early age, birth even, what kind of habits you want to model for them and what discussions will be important to have as your young person starts going to school and interacting with the world at large. This ties into the larger conversations parents can have with each other and with their kids about limits and boundaries. What is age and stage appropriate? How will you manage discussions around the whys you will inevitably receive? One thing that can be useful is taking an honest appraisal of your own device usage. Is there anything that you would like to change for yourself? Are the limits you want to set in the do as I say, not as I do camp? I've spoken with young people whose parents are incredibly strict about devices, those whose parents are incredibly lax, and everything in between. However, the one thing I haven't heard about and honestly would love to is parents having conversations with their kids about why they set the limits they do. I think this is an important point to consider as a parent or caregiver, or older sibling, or grandparent, anyone who basically interacts with a young person. What is driving the limits you are setting with your young person? A lot of times, I know parents are afraid or worried, and this is what drives decision making. One thing that can support parents in these conversations, and just in general, is education. Learning about the stuff that is worrying you and getting good, unbiased, accurate information that you can discuss with your child. Limits and boundaries exist for a reason, that reason being that they're really important for healthy functioning and relationships when done well, and you will almost certainly get pushback from any young person in your life, because if you have a young person in life, you know that they don't think they should have limits. But you put yourself in a much better position if you've done your research. So this is where I do a plug for my favorite resource for young people and the people that support them in navigating the digital world, NetSafe. So show of hands, has anyone here heard of NetSafe? Oh, yes, I love it. So I knew nothing about NetSafe till I started working with teenagers at a high school. And that's when it sort of came into my knowledge and I've become obsessed with it. So NetSafe is a fantastic resource for all things related to internet safety, cyberbullying, scams, image-based abuse, digital self-harm, and more. There's information for young people, adults, and educators, and they also have a space to report online incidents, which they then investigate. NetSafe is a great starting point for young people looking to learn more about keeping themselves safe online, and a safer experience is often a more positive one. And to be clear, I do think there are a lot of positives to technology, devices, and the digital world. The trick is keeping the positives while not falling into the traps presented by the ubiquitousness of all of these things we're talking about. And first things first, I don't think anyone here is arguing the point that kids are on devices, kids are on devices way more than is probably healthy. Although I will argue that I see similar behavior in many adults. Going on your phone, and I've been guilty of this, has become shorthand for, I prefer to avoid eye contact, please don't talk to me, in countless waiting rooms, trains, buses, queues, and more. I did a little research and found a great article from UNC Health, which is the University of North Carolina, which pointed out that, quote, even before the pandemic, the average American spent about 3 hours and 30 minutes a day using mobile internet in 2019. I haven't gone into pandemic stuff because obviously everyone was just in a weird place then. And now, the article pointed out that smartphone usage can affect cognition, social and emotional skills, and memory. And this was a study of adults. Because young people's brains are still very much in development, they're more likely to be impacted by these issues. Now, I spend a lot of time thinking about the impairment of social and emotional skills, because it's literally my job, and there's no doubt that these are impacted by devices and social media. One of the main issues I see is related to connectivity and community. In Judaism, as I'm sure it is in most other faiths, community is a massive part of one's spiritual life. Even now, Jewish people are going through the High Holy Days, or the New Year period, where we come together as a community, both physically and spiritually. Being present and being connected is important. When I first moved to New Zealand, I grew my own social circle from young people I met through Temple Sinai. There's a real emphasis on connection and caring for others in the Jewish faith, which is part of why I love it so much. In much the same way I have found my community here, many young people can find their people or their tribe online. This can be a really wonderful thing for adolescents and teenagers whose life context may mean that they in fact feel quite isolated from their whānau or peers. I've witnessed firsthand the value of this when participating in Shift Hui for 2 years via Discord, which Dave mentioned earlier, which is a social messaging app, and Zoom. Shift Hui is an annual gathering for LGBTQI+ Rangatahi in Aotearoa, where they can come together, share their experiences, make friends, and participate in workshops, panels, and group activities. Normally, this Hui would be held in person, but COVID has meant that the organizers have had to move the whole show online for 2 of the last 3 years. In this situation, and I'm sure many others, the ability to connect with others online has made a world of difference for young people who feel quite alone or misunderstood in their day-to-day lives. In addition, the proliferation of social media apps, I'm thinking primarily now of TikTok, which honestly I know so little about other than it sucks up my time, has meant that it is generally easier to find information and a sense of community online. Even just a cursory Google search of Jewish TikTok landed me loads of hits, including a list of 18 Jewish TikTokers you need to be following. I can't imagine how cool that would be to find if you were a young Jewish person living in a place where maybe there aren't a lot of other Jewish people or people who get it. The other side of this coin, however, is what I've decided to call connection fatigue. The idea that actually it can be quite overwhelming and exhausting to be connected with others all the time. This is actually something I can see a fair bit with the young people I work with. They feel like they always need to be on call for friends, often to their own detriment. It can be harder to create and maintain relationship boundaries when navigating messaging, social media, and my most hated thing, the teen group chat. Although to be fair, I do love a family group chat. Another thing that is important to talk about in the area is the impact on well-being and mental health, both positive and negative. On the positive side, a lot of young people use their devices to manage things like anxiety or depression. Phones hold music to help them feel calmer, apps to assist with mindfulness, and can be a lifeline to connect with others when mood is low. For many young people, their day can be absolutely thrown if their phone is dead or their headphones are broken. Understandably, I know the reaction of a lot of parents, educators, etc., can be a knee-jerk, well, I didn't have a phone, but I had to get on with it, or even for the more psychologically minded, they aren't giving themselves the chance to build resilience. As with most things, some of this thinking is helpful, some is not. First of all, smartphones and devices are here to stay. And baseline, they're definitely helpful for a lot of young people. Just because we didn't have them to help us with mental distress doesn't mean young people shouldn't either. Devices are a great resource, when used reasonably. Second, it could be true that reliance on phones can mean it can be more challenging to build resilience, although this is not always the case. In fact, I find that by accepting young people's use of technology in their day-to-day lives in an open way means that I can more easily work with them to establish additional ways of working towards feeling better out in the world. Also, let's be clear. We live in a world that can't help but be anxiety-producing at every stage for a young person. They live at home, where there's often more familial distress than people know about. They go to school, where they're put under a ridiculous amount of academic pressure. Don't get me started on NCA. Engaging with teachers who are often under a massive strain themselves, under-resourced, underpaid, underappreciated. They interact with their peers, where things like bullying, racism, body shaming, slut shaming, and homophobia can run rampant. And even positive social relationships can be at risk for boundary stomping and codependence. They exist in the larger world, where the global economy is tanking, bodily violence is an everyday trauma, and oh yes, the climate is in a crisis of unimaginable proportions. To be honest, if I was a teenager right now, I'm not sure I would get out of bed at all. So to get to my point, young people are remarkably, extraordinarily resilient. This is the world they live in, and they keep going. So who are we to begrudge them some new ways of coping, even if we can't necessarily make sense of them ourselves? However, I do also very much believe in the value of engaging kanohi kite kanohi, face-to-face, in the flesh, as well as the importance of spending time in the natural world. The physicality of connection to other and to our world is not something to be underestimated. For many young people I've spoken to, there's a sense of understanding about this. They often tell me about enjoying walks in nature, playing sports, or having activities they do with their families that are important to them. Children and teenagers may be wild, chaotic, and unpredictable creatures, but they are not robots glued to devices. Part of what you can do then, as caregivers or adults who engage with young people, is encourage them to figure out the people, places, and things in life that bring them joy and be as much a part of those things as they want you to be or let you be. Spend time with them and work with them to create a sense of community at home. Listen to them. Find out what they need from you. If they say their device is important to them, find out why. You may not get it, but they'll appreciate you trying, even if they roll their eyes. Going back to the idea of modeling, it can be helpful to spend some time on self-reflection as well. How do you interact with the world? How do you connect with others? How do you connect with your young person? It is important to encourage in them a sense of moderation as well. As with many things in life, excess more than anything can ruin a perfectly good vice. When I think about what I like most about my faith is the idea of tikkun olam, repairing the world. I believe my connection with this idea, along with a very healthy dose of watching Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood growing up, is what brought me to my profession. So where does tikkun olam fit into this picture? I think about the fact that our Rangata here inheriting a world that is, for all intents and purposes, badly broken. We as individuals may not have caused the strife we see in our society and on our planet, but collectively, something has gone wrong. I believe the way out of this doom and gloom, and I swear I really am an optimist, that's my husband, is to focus on how we can repair our connections with one another, how we increase empathy and loving kindness, and decrease fear and isolation. A big part of this is accepting our young people for who they are. Flawed, developing individuals who are muddling through this messy life alongside one another and us oldie moldies. And before you think, oh, she's so young, not old. When I hear young people describe music I listen to in my teenage years as classic anything, I basically just want to walk out of the room and quit my job. So they have the weight of the world on their shoulders. And perhaps by changing the way we interact with them and the things that they value, we can show them that they are ultimately not alone. We can show them that we know that while both the world and the internet can be scary, awful places, both can also contain beauty and life and spaces to be heard and respected, places where they can share themselves and feel safe. For better or worse, this is our community. What kind of community do we want to be? Thank you.